Welcome to the Lister Health Talks podcast, hosted by Lieutenant Colonel Garrett Holt, the commander of Lister Army Health Clinic and the health services director at Fort Novosel. Each month, listen in as the team focuses their discussion on relevant, relatable health content that empowers your health and the readiness of the force. In today's show, we sit down with our behavioral health team to discuss Mental Health Awareness Month and breaking stigmas.
Well, hello, Fort Novosel. This is Lieutenant Colonel Garrett Holt, the commander for Lister Army Health Clinic and the host of the Lister Health Talks podcast. Welcome you back to another exciting episode with ready and relevant content that stands the test of time. You know, we spend a lot of time making sure that you get content that really works for you regardless of what time of year it is, but we try to align it with certain months. And so for this month in particular is Mental Health Awareness Month, and I'm very excited to have my two guests here, Mr. Brent Eubanks and Ms. Janiska Buford. Both are licensed clinical social workers and behavioral health therapists here at Lister Army Health Clinic, and I just want to welcome you both to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Yeah, very welcome. All right, so let's dig into it. Brent, you've been a return guest. Good to have you here. But Ms. Buford, tell me a little bit about yourself. What's what brought you here to Lister, and how long you've been with us, and a little bit about your background.
Okay, I'm relatively new. I started working here in October of 2022, so thank you for having me here. Yeah. I've been a therapist for about 7 years now.
Fantastic. Mr. Eubanks, I know, again, return guest. Tell me a little bit about you, about how long you've been with us, and a little bit about your background.
Yes, sir. So I started in January 2020, just a few weeks before COVID hit, and now I've been here for 4 years and just a few months. I've really enjoyed becoming acclimated to working in the military setting, and I obviously have an interest in mental health, so this is, you know, a very good position for me to be in.
For sure. I tell you, Mental Health Awareness Month, you know, mental health is important to us no matter the month, but it's nice to have a month really to focus in on it and really be able to question within ourselves and ask ourselves kind of a self-audit. Are we where we want to be from that perspective, and where we want to go? So let's talk a little bit about what mental health awareness is. What should we start thinking about for our listeners? Ms. Buford, over to you first.
So mental health awareness is about reducing the stigma that's associated with mental illnesses. About one in five people deal with mental illness on a regular basis. And so it's about normalizing the experiences of others and just helping us as a people become more cognizant of what may be going on in the community, about just checking in on our people and making sure that everyone is really doing okay.
Yeah, that's helpful. I think what probably our listeners, at least for me, really stuck is one in five. You know, that means if we're a full sedan, one in five of us has something. Not you know, and it's, you know, that doesn't mean if you're in a full sedan right now, you try and point at each other and who is it. But in all honesty, it's a good time to say, hey, you know, this might be something that I need to look into, that it is a great likelihood that you may not struggle with, but may have something that, you know, you need to unpackage a little further. And I think that's really helpful. And Mr. Eubanks, over to you. What kind of does this month bring that's different than others?
Well, I think that it just, you know, kind of brings home the fact that, you know, we need to still do a lot of work in, you know, reducing the stigma. So, you know, there's the fear that if they seek out mental health services that, you know, they could be career impacting situation. And, you know, we have to make sure that, you know, we're treating this from a medical standpoint. You know, if you had high blood pressure, if you had diabetes, you know, something along those lines, what would you do? You would go to, you know, your provider to, you know, get some sort of treatment plan, you know, started. Same would go for, you know, mental health. It doesn't negate the fact that it's still a physical issue, even though it involves, you know, the brain and emotions, it's still a physical issue. So if you had, you know, high blood pressure, diabetes, anything of that sort, you would go to your provider to ask for treatment. Same would be for, you know, a mental health condition as well.
That's good. And so, hey, well, you know, let's carry on with kind of that theme of kind of the corollary between a physical health thing versus a mental health. But, and just as in physical health, you know, chronic, you know, diagnoses or even acute, you know, there's susceptibility in that. And so I wonder if you could help our listeners and Ms. Buford, I'll go over to you first. What are some susceptible factors that may increase likelihood or even risk for somebody being either diagnosed or maybe even just simply needing to come talk?
Okay, well, yeah, to come see behavioral health, it's good to come and see behavioral health if you notice that you're having severe hopelessness or just hopelessness, persistent sadness, anxiety that is affecting your job performance, just symptoms that you're noticing are sort of permeating throughout different areas of your life.
Okay.
And so what might have just been work stress has now kind of metastasized into not just work stress, but it's causing family stress as well. It's causing your social environment to be shifted. It's causing other people to almost look at you and say, hey, is everything okay? Or now what you could kind of mask over and seem as though it's not there, other people are becoming more aware of it. And so it's just starting to show itself in different places. And that's when we really want to say, okay, this is definitely more of a behavioral health concern because it's affecting my behavior. It's a good idea for me to come and get some help.
I think what it's been great, you know, I've been in for about 20 years now, which is hard to believe. And to see the stigma, I believe, you know, in my opinion, it seems like it went from, yeah, there was a definitive stigma to there was a faux stigma where people thought that there was something there. And to now there shouldn't be, there's nothing. I mean, we have everybody along the line, and it's not just Lister at the other MTFs I've worked at as well. I mean, people up and down, you name the rank, you name the competency or the skill that they're in. I mean, there's people that are coming to see us, and it's not a showstopper, right? And even if it is, maybe it's probably just temporarily,
right?
And we move through it. Yeah, that's helpful. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, and we can come back to risk factors in just a second, but I want to talk, you know, maybe I'm just stressed right now and I'm kind of debating whether I'm going to come in, but what are some coping skills? Mr. Umakes, I'll start with you. And what are some coping skills that you kind of advise your patients
and
with?
So in terms of stress specifically, I would say that, you know, there's a need for being able to identify what are acute stressors in your life, things that have come up in the last, you know, week, month, 6 months, you know, something along those lines, something very time limited, as opposed to chronic stressors in your life that have been kind of lingering on for, you know, many months or even a year or more. So being able to identify, you know, what are some acute and chronic stressors in your life, take care of the acute stressors first. Those that you can have some kind of influence on and can change, work towards changing those, and then work down, you know, the line to tackling those chronic stressors, because we can't fix everything in a day or a week or even a month. Sometimes things are, you know, very much long lasting, and we need to be able to be patient with ourselves and allow ourselves some grace and patience.
And it starts to enter into that idea that, and really the experiences that I think we've all seen, both our listeners and us at the clinic, of folks waiting to the last minute. And what I mean by that is you're retiring at, you know, you decide that you're going to retire at 20 years, and so you're going to go see somebody at 19. Because you didn't want to impact it, right? You said, hey, I prioritized my career. Well, that means you may have should have prioritized your mental health too. But getting to your coping skills, Mr. Eubanks, that you're talking about, you know, getting in early in your life to get those or your profession to, you know, maybe you weren't equipped with them at different stages, but now's the time. Because it turns out stressors don't get any less along the way. That's wonderful. Thank you. So Ms. Buford, how about you? What are some coping mechanisms that you advise some of your patients with?
I think one of the biggest things that I try to encourage is self-care. I think a lot of times we just forget about the amount of power that we have in just being able to focus and be selfish for just a second and take time for yourself. So one of the things, especially if you're, you know, working and you're a parent and you're a husband and you're, you know, a wife, you have all these different roles and all these different hats that you have to wear, is not forgetting that before you were all of those other things, you were an individual. And so you enjoy just taking time to read a book, or you enjoy just going outside to take a walk. And those types of things help alleviate and reduce stress just by making time for yourself. There's also deep breathing techniques. A lot of people think about, you know, taking a deep breath and they're just like, you know, oh, I do that all day. Well, no, there's actually a strategy to deep breathing. There's different box breathing techniques. And so you can inhale for 4 seconds, hold it for 5 seconds, and then exhale deeply for 6 seconds. And so different things like that. Of course, you know, our body needs that oxygen. It actually helps just to kind of reduce some stress, kind of like release some endorphins and spark a little bit of that serotonin, and just things to kind of put you in a better state of mind. And so then there's also just listening to music or thinking about something that's like nostalgic for you, to just kind of take your brain away from that acute spot of crisis and just to put you somewhere else for a second.
One of the previous jobs I was in, talking about just kind of being present, my commute was something like at a minimum 30 minutes, more like an hour if there was during rush hour. And I realized now that I have a shorter commute, or in the past couple of jobs I've been fortunate to have a shorter commute, I don't have that time. Now, some people would say, well, you're removing the stressor of traffic. And like, that's true. But like you just said, I usually cranked up some music and giving that time. And I had to figure out, oh, wow, I have now kids and, you know, not just, you know, spouse, obviously, and all these other things demanding my time. And it's on me to command my time and figure out where to be present. What are some other thoughts? I'm interested in that idea of kind of presence and centering yourself. Mr. Eubanks, any thoughts on ideas, how you've maybe advised people to kind of center themselves or think about within themselves, be present in the moment?
Yes, sir. There's a concept called mindfulness, and there's all types of different ways in which you can practice what is referred to as mindfulness. But one of the things that I've worked with in the patients in my caseload is trying to be present in the moment, okay? And that kind of combines two different things. One, deep breathing exercises, taking a deep breath in through your nostrils, holding it for 3 seconds, and then exhaling for 3 seconds. And then taking a look at your surroundings, picking out 5 things you can see, 4 things you can touch, 3 things you can hear, 2 things you can smell, 1 thing you can taste, to bring you back into the present moment. And oddly enough, when I model that for the patients in my office, or they do it themselves rather, I will ask them, when you were doing that, were you thinking about anything else? And usually their response is no, because their thoughts are distracted from whatever it is that they're thinking about. Because here's what we have to remember about both depression and anxiety. It's all thought-based, okay? So if we're anxious, our thoughts are somewhere tomorrow, next week, next month. If we're depressed, our thoughts are somewhere yesterday, last week, last month. So neither one of those time frames are in the now. So we have to do something to bring ourselves back into the present moment. And mindfulness is just a good way of being able to accomplish that task.
That's helpful. You said words like anxiety and you know, things of that nature. And I'm immediately, I don't know if other listeners relate to this, I'm immediately tied to the era that we're in, where the inputs are infinite. When I grew up as a kid, there was only one TV show I'd watch after I got school. And then after that, TV went off and there's no more screens in the house, and I'm off out, which I'm sure is some of our listeners, but some are not. And that's not the generations we're leading. And so I'm curious of what is, let's start talking about boundaries. We talked a little bit about coping skills. What do boundaries look like? And I think sometimes when I hear the term boundaries, I'm saying, you know, I'm locking off and I'm, you know, not doing things, period. But really, it might be a different way of going about it. Any thoughts on boundaries? Ms. Buford, we'll start with you.
Yes, I think that for society, it's very easy for us to recognize physical boundaries, you know, like I don't want this person within 6 feet of me, you know, things of that nature. However, emotional boundaries is what I think we really need to focus on as it relates to mental health and mental illness. And what that looks like is, your downtime, allow that to try to be your downtime. If you don't have to take your work home, then try not to take your work home. If you're able to disconnect from, you know, the constant phone calls, or, you know, even sometimes we can have stressful people that we love, significant people in our lives, but we're already under a great amount of stress. And then, you know, we may just not want to talk. And so it's about learning how to say, maybe not no, but just not right now.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like trying that, to delay, you know, that conversation at times.
Yeah, that's really good. Like I said, infinite amount of inputs, and you feel like you have to either address it or work it, or sometimes even just reconcile it in your mind, you know, in terms of, like, let's say in the context of social media, and all of a sudden there's all of these things that just bear down on you. Mr. Eubanks, any thoughts on boundaries?
So just a little sidebar on boundaries. Something that I do in my work with patients is I get them to identify what they will accept from themselves and others, and then what they will not accept from themselves and others. And then also who they are as an individual, and then who they are not. So essentially, having boundaries is like having a fence around you, okay? If you don't have a fence around you, or you have one and the gate is just wide open, then you're letting everyone and all of their quote-unquote stuff affect you, right? So we have to decide, all right, this is who I am, this is who I am not, this is what I'm going to tolerate, this is what I'm not going to tolerate. But it's up to them to stick to that plan, because if not, then their boundaries aren't very you know, set in stone, so to speak.
Yeah, no, that's really good. I'm just for our folks that are looking, you know, what, or I should back up. In our previous episode, we talked about, you know, some of our folks, 'tis the season, graduations are happening. And for a lot of our listeners, either they're kiddos or they themselves are going away and off to college. I can't believe it, right? And you probably can't either. Off they go and they're going away from the house. So you've done all that you can do to nurture and develop them, and they're going off, but you're probably a little stressed yourself. What are some tools that you kind of would encourage them to use, or advice that they'd give their kiddos?
I think the advice would be to recognize that there may be an adjustment period. And so what that looks like is sometimes when we're plucked from one situation and put into the next, no matter how exciting that thing may be or how much anticipation we may have going into it, it could still bring about a lot of different stress. And so I think that I would advise them to know themselves and know, when is my stress? Where am I on this? Am I at a 0 out of 10 where nothing's bothering me? Or am I at a 10 out of 10? And then at what place do I feel like it's best for me to need to call back to my parents and say, hey, I need help, or phone a friend, and just make sure that your kid knows what resources that are available, what are the resources that are offered at the school, what are the resources offered, you know, provider-wise, do we still call the pediatrician, do they have a doctor nearby, so that they know where they can turn. And then there's also crisis lines and helplines that you can call at any given point in time to just talk to someone, and it's an unbiased person, someone that doesn't know you, that's not affiliated with you, because adjustments can be difficult. And so I would just advise the parent to be there, and maybe even set a check-in time. You know what I mean? You don't want to be the helicopter parent, I think is a term that we use. But instead, like, hey, maybe hold each other accountable. We'll touch base, you know, once a day at such and such time, so that you're giving and respecting their new boundaries as well as being there for them.
Yeah, that's helpful. And Mr. Eubanks, over to you. Any advice that you give to the parents sending their kiddos off to college?
So I think it's important to recognize, you know, the locus of control that you have in your life in terms of being, you know, a parent. You'll be a parent for the rest of your life, right? But at the same time, you know, those apron strings, you know, will need to be cut at some point. And, you know, your son or daughter will need to, you know, be able to experience life, you know, on their own, you know, with your help and support, obviously when needed. But as Ms. Buford said, not to be that helicopter parent and be hovering and trying to control everything. So I think that we have to remind ourselves that, you know, even though they're our son or they're our daughter, they are, you know, beginning to turn into a young adult. And with becoming a young adult comes responsibilities and change. And change is hard. You know, change is hard for, you know, children. It's hard for teenagers. It's hard for young adults. It's hard for parents. You know, there's no one, I think, that's, you know, not immune to experiencing the difficulties of change.
Oh, wow. That's really good. Well, I'm just blown away. I think we could sit here and talk probably for ages on different mechanisms and coping skills. I do want to take a pause real quick and just, you know, highlight to our listeners, you know, we have an array of behavioral health professionals here inside the clinic. That's not where it ends, right? So the clinical space certainly is in our four walls at Lister in terms of clinical behavior health and therapy in that regard. But there's other resources outside of our four walls. Military Family Life Consultants, of course, the chaplain, Military One Source, of course, 988 if you're in a crisis, a host of different things. But I do want to ask our guests here, how do I kind of decide where to go, and what does it look like to be, maybe I'm in not the wrong place, but not the most appropriate place for what I need. So Ms. Buford, over to you. What advice would you give to our patients about where to go?
What I would say is, if you're unsure, but you just know that there is something going on with you, you can always just walk into the behavioral health department. You can fill out a self-referral form. Once you fill out that form and list kind of what's going on with you, we will have someone that will follow up with you. And if they feel like your situation can be handled with MFLAC or Military One Source or the chaplain or any of our different resources, our non-clinical resources, they will point you in that direction. We also have a screening tool, and you could come in and just ask for that screening tool. And you can look at that tool and you can see the common concerns and focus areas. And so you can kind of gauge, like, okay, is this just work stress? Am I just a little bit angry about this one thing? Okay, I'll go to MFLAC, Military One Source. Or is this severe anger? Is it really affecting my ability to do my job? Is it impacting my sleep and causing me significant distress? Okay, that's a behavioral health concern.
Okay, no, that's helpful. And Mr. Eubanks, how about you?
So three areas of functioning that we always look to in terms of if behavioral health treatment is appropriate. If someone is having difficulty in their work life, their home life, and in the social environment, then that's probably a clue that something, you know, somewhat pathological is going on with them that would require some kind of in-depth clinical-based services. But again, like Ms. Buford said, if, you know, if it's, you know, work stress or, you know, problems of adjustment, you know, those kinds of things, sometimes those can be, you know, served certainly with, you know, MFLAC or Military One Source. But that's not to say that we will not, you know, want to provide any kind of intervention that's needed and warranted from, you know, the patient themselves.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I think one of the things that, having been here a couple of years, that I really appreciate is that while we can't share necessarily patient information and clinical diagnosis based off, you know, HIPAA privacy laws, there's certainly a collaboration of folks. And, you know, from the chaplain team, from even Military One Source, MFLEX, Nurse Advice Line, our team, there's that collaboration to make sure you walk in any one of our doors, be it actual physical door, virtual in the case of some of these phone lines, that we're going to get you to where you got to go. And so I think that's super, super important. Well, hey, we're closing in on our time, but I want to give each of our guests a little bit more time to see if there's any last parting words that they would have and any advice for our listeners. Ms. Buford, over to you.
It takes the average person 11 years to finally go and get help and speak with someone about whatever it is that they're battling. And in today's age, there's no need for that. There are unlimited resources that are available and at your disposal. And I just encourage people to take advantage of those resources.
Yeah, that's important. And if you're a leader out there, if you think about 11 years, let's say that it is something that's developing, you know, in elementary school or even in high school, and you push in 11 years, I mean, you can start to figure out what your population is that you might need to put a little bit more focus and time, and at least communicating resources. So that's a really helpful, note there. Thank you. Mr. Eubanks, any final words?
Just one thought. We live in the society where we send memes to people that we care about, and we post memes,
guilty,
and we do all
guilty.
This stuff, right? So I saw this meme a couple of weeks ago, and I saved it, and it says, "You seriously have no idea what people are dealing with in their personal life, so just be nice. It's that simple."
Yeah, finer words can't be said. Well, I'll be honest. I really do wish, I say this every time, but we could spend some more time. I think there's a lot of resources. And, you know, for the leaders out there, if you're interested in, you know, really unpackaging this a little bit more with your team, maybe a small group or a larger group, definitely reach out to us. And we want to make sure that we're supporting you. You know, we have so many feelers within the Lister Clinic to be able to kind of gauge how the community is going. If you're an informal leader and you're just a battle buddy, a friend, and you feel like you just want to know some more resources, definitely let us know. We can help connect you. I also want to leave you with something that I heard recently about, you know, what does it mean to have courage? And to have courage, it's not an actual definition from a dictionary, but it's just a way of looking at it. And that is, to have courage means you have a deeper sense or appreciation of what your truth is. And that really spoke to me, and hopefully it does for you as well, that you know that there's something beyond you. Maybe you're in a space that you just need a little bit of help to be coached out of. And we are standing here ready to be a part of that with you, to walk alongside with you. So I just want to thank all of our listeners, as always, listening into us. This is Lieutenant Colonel Holt signing off, reminding you that your healthiest chapter is ahead, and that the only way is forward.
The Lister Health Talks podcast is produced by the Lister Army Health Clinic Public Affairs Office at Fort Novosel. Be sure to catch our next episode, as we have some very special guests joining us. Stay healthy, Fort Novosel.